The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. It is April 10th, 2023, to be rebroadcast on April 12th, 2023, at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, and I may be able to respond, or Fran may be able to respond. So drop us a line. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can leave a comment right down here below if you're watching live, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also send notifications to the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. So we are at home recording shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Shout out to the Huskies. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or FMRadioFree.com. New little site there. Ron's Rant of the Week. So, you know, when you start out your day with, I don't have anything to rant about, we can't do that 2 weeks in a row. So I think I did that last week. But it was so nice out yesterday. How nice was it, Fran? I spent the day working in the yard. What's with that? Well, you know what? Sometimes you got to get
You're becoming an old Italian dude.
No, I'm becoming a responsible homeowner. And you know, I'll have plenty of time to ride my bike during the week. It's going to be really nice this week here. We're going up into the 70s and 80s up here in Connecticut, which is highly unusual. But then again, I've seen that on my birthday, and my birthday tends to be at the end of this month every year. Tends to be, is always at the end of the month this time of year. So, you know, I've seen it before. It happens. I've also seen blizzards right now, too. Same thing. So you just don't know. It's New England. This is what we do. It happens. Positive side. We had a great first club ride on Saturday. We had 12 well-behaved and pleasant riders. spring. It's a beautiful thing. Anyway, great ride. We pounded some hills because you always pound hills out here. I wouldn't say we pounded them, but they pounded us because it's early season and that happens, you know. The nice thing about early season rides, too, that I really like, Fran, is that nobody's in really great shape.
Yeah.
Which makes everyone more patient with one another, I think. But yes, that's just my feeling. I just think it presents a less egotistical ride.
And people are more likely to hang out and chat. They're just really
happy to be out and see each other. That's great.
I had a couple people who were like, it was so great to ride with you. I had a couple other people who were like, get hold of me during the week. We'll ride during the week. Yeah. You know, keep me posted.
It's good stuff.
I made posts of my bike rides. I had another person say, get a hold of me when you go there next time and I'll go with you.
There you go.
And so lots of reconnecting.
Yeah, that's really good. That's cool.
My dental assistant. That's who it was.
Yeah. Your dental assistant wants to go for a bike ride with you?
She does.
Awesome.
Linda.
That's cool.
Yeah, she's very
that's
nice.
Cool. Well, yeah. one of my spin people from my Monday, Wednesday, Friday class said that she would like to ride up to spin class with me some morning.
Wow.
Yeah, that's an accomplishment. Because I talked about the weather getting nice enough this week that I could do that sort of thing. And that's the other thing. The weather is getting warm enough now that, this old guy doesn't like the real cold weather. And it's not like it's cold out during the day here, but in the morning, there was frost this morning on the fields. It's still cold.
60 today.
It's still cold out. So, you know, early mornings can be a lot colder than the rest of the day can be. So you still got to kind of, you know, respect the weather to a certain degree.
Is the sap still rising? Can you still make maple syrup?
If you're getting frost, the sap is still rising, yes.
No
if it gets
kidding.
Cool enough at night to freeze, then you're definitely running sap.
No kidding.
So anyway, lots of celebrating here. Speaking of positive side, here in Mansfield stores, congrats to Danny and his crew on the national championships. Danny Hurley and the UConn Huskies took it all the way this year, and they won Danny's first national championship, but UConn's fifth national championship. So a big, big shout out to the UConn Husky men's team. And we truly are the basketball capital of the world out here. Or at least we like to think so. So, anyway, me being not just a cycling fanatic, I am also a college basketball fanatic. I really love it. I live in the middle of it. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, that's what happened. It was a big deal. Really big deal. And that happened between the time that I was on the air last week and now. Because it was Monday night. So, very, very cool. Let's see. What else do I have here? Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. Remember I've been talking about that pesky carbon creak? It's always a pesky carbon creak. There's so many of them because carbon fiber bicycles are like, they're like bass drums. You know, they do that. And I mentioned that I had a friend last week with a creak and a click, and I mentioned that I thought it might be the seat post. Well, guess what? Carbon paste did the trick. It was the seat post. It was definitely the seat post in the seat tube. Solved the problem. Problem done, over, out. He took it for a ride this past week and said, it's gone. And there you go. That's it. So, you know, that little tip that I gave you last week about, you know, pull your seat post out, see if it's dry or not. And if it is, then put some carbon paste on it and put it back in. It worked. It worked really good. And that was a carbon post inside of a carbon bicycle. I've also seen this with carbon posts inside of aluminum bicycles or inside of steel bicycles. Should you ever put a carbon post on a steel bicycle? That's debatable, and that can be talked about in comments if you'd like. My steel bicycle has a rare and very, very, oh boy, they weren't made a lot. They didn't make a whole lot of these things, but I have a titanium Campagnolo post in my steel bike. Kind of cool. And why is that cool? Because the titanium actually absorbs some of the shock. It's, you know, I don't know if I really notice it, but it is nice to have a campy tie post in your bike. But anyway, beside the point. Okay, point. Okay, what else do I have here? Rear radar. I want to talk a little bit about rear radar today. Rear radar is a function that you can apply to your bicycle, and it will let you know if there are cars coming up from behind. And Fran was very kind, and she bought me a nice present at Christmas, and I received my very first rear radar system. The rear radar system is really interesting because the way it works is it will detect cars behind you, multiple cars behind you, and it will also detect the speed at which they are approaching you. And on your actual computer screen, when the radar is talking to the computer correctly, you can see either a light red line to the left of your computer screen, or it may get dark. And if it's dark, it means the car is coming up very fast. And if it's light, it means the car is coming up at a normal speed. So very cool. Totally, totally cool. Also, while this is all going on, the rear light is flashing. And when it flashes, apparently, and I don't know this for a fact, but I remember doing some SAG work last year for Farm to Fork Fondo. And if you came up behind the cyclist pretty fast, the flashing would get faster as you got closer. Way cool stuff. yes, there is a cost to this. Yes, there are very few manufacturers that actually make these things. But I do have a little link here on that, I think. So there's a couple of manufacturers. Garmin was the originator of this, which means they probably have a patent on this thing, which is why there aren't any others out there, or very few. There's another company called Magene, M-A-G-E-N-E, which also is making a rear radar system. Again, you know, it's not inexpensive, but it is, I got to tell you, the safety concern on it is great. I still ride with the mirror and probably always will from this point on, because once you start using a mirror, it's hard to stop using a mirror. So, but the cool thing is, as I'm alerted to the fact that there's a car back, I then glance down at my mirror and then I see the car coming. Whereas before, I would have had to hear the car coming before seeing the car coming. Now I can see it in two different areas, both on my computer screen, which flashes and does its thing, and then also in my mirror. So I like it a lot. And here's another reason why I like it a lot. When we were out doing our group ride the other day, I was able to ride a little further out into the road because I knew that my computer or my radar would tell me about oncoming cars from the back, and at which point I could then say car back and then go over towards the side of the road, which enables me to give that car more space, but it also gives a really great visual as a ride leader that this is the thing you're supposed to do right now, instead of having to bark at people because they don't get over when the cars are coming through. And, you know, really two abreast is fine. Three abreast is a Peloton. No good. Not good. Not good when you're dealing with traffic. If you have a quiet area, you can do that. That's great. If you have a sanctioned race you're in, that's also great. But it's not necessarily great on a group ride. So anyway, love it. Just can't believe how much I love this thing. It's very reliable. I don't get a lot of false negatives. I do occasionally get false negatives when there's a group of cyclists coming up behind me, because it does detect that sometimes as a car, but rarely. It happens, and you get used to it, and then you just glance down and you can see it. Coolest thing ever. It's a rechargeable battery on it, so you can plug it into a USB port and you can recharge it. I would say, it says here, false positives, almost none. Reliable and proven. Excellent multi-object detection. That's the cool part, is that it doesn't just detect one car behind you, but two or three. And the coolest thing about that is, a lot of times, you know, you'll have a car back, and you'll kind of glance down, you'll see it in your mirror, and then the car goes by, and then you think you're okay, but you're not, because this will tell you you're not okay yet. There's still another car there, or there's maybe two or three more cars there. I am just, like, thrilled with this thing. I think it's great. It is a Garmin unit, and it does talk to my Wahoo computer, so that doesn't seem to be a concern. It's just a really cool thing. About 6 hours of battery life on this thing, and when it starts running out of battery power, it will tell you radar low battery right on your screen. So that's kind of cool too. Real battery life, 9.5 hours in flash mode. Tail light, yes, it has no camera on this. It's just a ANT and Bluetooth connectivity, and it's a micro USB charge point. So it's really, really, really cool, and I am just thrilled with this thing. And someday, if Fran's really nice to me, maybe she'll get one too.
What am I getting?
No, nothing. Never mind, dear. No. Never mind. But I think it's
the radar
definitely
thingy?
Yeah, the radar thingies are very, very cool. Apparently this Magene one has a few more problems with false positives, and you know, it definitely isn't the same, and its battery life is different. But anyway, they're all there. That's the idea. I really, really, really like it. And if you want to go crazy here, I think that there's also one that is way, way more expensive that has a camera on it too. So you can actually see the cars coming up behind you. So pretty cool. I like it. I wanted to talk about it a little bit. I said I would once I finally got a chance to do this. And we had talked in earlier shows about the fact that I had gotten one of these things, but I hadn't had a chance to use it yet. So I did. It was cool. I love it. I recommend it. If you can afford it, I totally recommend it. It certainly, of all the changes that I've made to my bike over the years, and, you know, most of them are not so technical, because you know me as the guy who doesn't do the disc brake thing and likes his cables better than wires, but, you know, we all have our thing. This is outstanding. This is totally outstanding. It's, there are innovations out there that I have put on my bicycle over the years that, the one big breakthrough a number of years ago was clipless pedals. Wow. Huge difference. Love them. Always will love them. One of the best innovations for the bicycle that I have used in years. You know, you can take your aero bars and your aero frame sets and your weird wheels and all that, and you can just, that stuff doesn't excite me too much. That's not like breakthrough technology to me. But clipless pedals, breakthrough technology. A rear derailleur is breakthrough technology. And that came well before I got onto a bicycle. But that's breakthrough technology. So I used to say, when clipless pedals came out, I used to say it was the best innovation since the rear derailleur, just to give people an idea of just how dramatic it was. So anyway, that's kind of cool. And then now I think I have to put on the list the rear radar. It's cool. It's way safer. If you have any concerns about riding on the road and riding in traffic, and you want to have a little bit more awareness about what's going on behind you, because it's really hard to see behind you as you're going down the road, this is a great invention. Not a good invention, a great invention. And again, certainly a lot less expensive than electronic shifting. I'll leave it at that, just to say something about it. So let's move on here. Let's go for the things that are in the news. Well, yesterday was not only a great day to be out working in your yard, but it was also a great day to be watching bicycle racing. And if you didn't have a chance to check it out, it was the Paris-Roubaix over the weekend. The Paris-Roubaix Femme was on Saturday. So the ladies' race was on Saturday. It was 145.5 kilometers in length. And at about 36K to go, it was still pretty bunched together. You know, the women are funny. They, I don't know why it happens this way, but in the men's race, it breaks apart pretty quickly. It eventually turns into a break apart. And, you know, there's little breakaways, and then they get reeled back in. But they don't stay clustered together for as long as the women do. And the women stay clustered together for a long time. And so at about, what did I have here? 36K to go, a big crash comes and takes down most of the favorites. And, you know, it's a Paris-Roubaix. So, you know, you fall down on cobblestones. It's not good. It was a big mess. There were bikes everywhere. You know, I'm sure there were choice words said, but, you know, things like that happen when you're in the Paris-Roubaix. People fall down. It happens. So, everybody gets back on. That starts separating the race a little bit. And then and about 13K to go, another crash. And just one person goes down in that. And then 4K to go, there's seven away in a break. And those seven entered the velodrome together. Another unusual experience with the Paris-Roubaix. A lot of times they come in solo or two or whatever. that's kind of just been a historical thing with the men. The women, they came in with seven riders. They enter the velodrome, crash.
Ah!
One of the girls goes down. She makes it through the entire Paris-Roubaix, and then down she goes on the velodrome. Fortunately, she was the only one to go down, and now there are six. And Canada's Allison Jackson grabbed the finish at the end with a nice sprint at the finish. So North American rider wins the Paris-Roubaix. Pretty cool. Very, very cool. Billy wants to go back to drum brakes on his car. Not.
I'm talking about Marissa. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Fran has a friend that rode the Paris-Roubaix.
Sportif,
which is a... It's like just a ride, right? You just get to experience.
Yes, you get to ride the course.
You get to experience the route, and they have that a lot with the Tour de France too. And you can sign up for these groups that will take you for the Tour de France experience.
She did the one last week too. But what was the one last week?
Last week was Flanders.
Yeah, she did that too.
Yep. So anyway, how'd she make out?
Oh my gosh. Well, she had a blast. I have pictures. She went, she did the Sportif. So she did it with some guy friends too.
Yep.
And she's wearing her, her AXN sports fitness, because she's a fitness coach.
Right.
And she'll coach you, especially if you're a peri and postmenopausal woman.
Right.
That's her specialty.
Did she do the 145K loop or the route or the 159K?
I am assuming 145, but I don't know.
That would be the women's route. Yeah.
And she's got these beautiful pictures of her smiling with her friends that she was riding with. And there's some pictures of her actually riding. And this is Marissa. There she is.
If you're listening to us, you can't see those pictures.
No, Fran is holding a nice picture of Marissa.
Fran is holding her phone in front of my camera here.
And
so.
Then here's a picture.
Just so you know what this is all about.
Marissa.
We are an audio show, Fran.
And here's a picture of Marissa's hands.
And there you go.
Yeah.
So all right. So anyway, she finished. She didn't crash.
No.
She was okay.
She had fun, and she was exhausted afterwards, and she scraped the skin off her hands.
Yeah, well,
very bumpy.
Yeah, there's a lot of abrasion that happens with your hands. You're rattling the whole way. The thing that gets me about riding on gravelly stuff or cobbly stuff like that is the vibration in your arms, and your arms just itch. They just itch.
Right.
And that has got to be really, really tough. So anyway, moving on to the men's race, I am going to go to, last little piece here on the women's race. The 2021 Canadian Road Race champion found enough at the end to take what is surely the biggest victory of her career. Katia Ragusa was second across the line, and Martha Trujan was third. And the chasers ended up 12 seconds back of the leaders at the end of the race. Kopecky, who had won last week at Flanders, and she's been dominating the Spring Classics with her SD Works teammates, won that sprint to nab seventh overall. So that's what happened. That's it. That means that the woman that fell down on the track did not get back up and finish. That's interesting, because she was the seventh person in that group. So, anyway, we're going to go on to the men's, and here we go. The men's race first of all, the conditions were very, very, very dry, and not like dry to the point where it was dusty, because they had some rain a few days before, and there were puddles in places along the course. There was definitely some puddling going on. I also saw... a number of places that there was grass and moss growing up between the cobbles, and I thought the sheep and the goats were going to take care of that problem. But apparently they didn't take care of everything. So shame on you, sheep and goats, for not taking care of all of the greenery on the cobbles. But anyway, I did happen to notice that. And it's not a big deal until you have been on a road that has moss growing up in it, and you're trying to go around a corner and it's wet And oh boy, I can tell you, I came down Mount Greylock a number of years ago, and I remember going into one corner and looking down and seeing more green than black underneath me and going, uh-oh. And it was a little shaky going through the turn, but you know, once I got out of it, I felt a lot more confident. But boy, that definitely makes you think twice. Speaking of which, these guys riding in the Paris-Roubaix this year, I think they broke the record again for the time. They just keep getting faster and faster. I watched some of the tangents that Matthew Vanderpoel was taking, and I mean, there was one towards the end that I thought he was going to hit. They put these funky little barriers along the edge of the course, and I thought for sure he was going to run right into one, and even the announcers all went, whoa, like that. But he, you know, he's a cross guy. So anyway, he's a cross guy. So he's going to be able to handle adverse conditions or tricky turns when necessary. That stuff that just kind of pops out in front of you. So anyway, let's move on. The Hell of the North, 159.4 miles. Some of us get excited for the Easter Bunny and some of us for the Paris-Roubaix. And that's the Easter Bunny was nice and did come and visit, and that was very nice. But the Paris-Roubaix, man, it's the Paris-Roubaix. So the Vanderpoel attack started in like section 12. They just were relentless, and Matthew Vanderpoel was obviously on a mission yesterday, and he was on a mission to make things really happen for him. He had in his mind that he was going to go here, and he did. So anyway, there was a pretty major crash. John Degenkolb went down, and Matthew Vanderpoel and Wout van Aert broke away at that point. And then there was a flat tire for Wout van Aert, all in the space of 2 minutes. So away are Vanderpoel and Wout van Aert, and they're just working together because they're the two best riders that can handle cobbles out there, in my estimation. This is obviously because they have a lot of cyclocross background. You know how I feel about cyclocross and about how I feel about handling skills. Cross is wonderful. It really amazes me that these two guys who have been racing cross all winter and doing really well with it, those races are an hour long. This was 159.4 miles. They didn't finish it in an hour, I can tell you that. So the fact that they can, quote unquote, switch gears and go over to this type of discipline and all the other disciplines of the monument races and the classic races just really kind of blows my mind that they can be as good as they are in cross and also be as good as they are in classic racing. It's really pretty cool. So anyway, that crash for Degenkolb was ugly. It didn't look good. And of course, he kind of got himself kind of too close to the edge, and then there was no room, and off they went. A lot of these guys are riding on the edge also. They're not actually riding on the cobbles. They're riding in the dirt sections next to the cobbles, which is interesting. Really interesting when you're on the right side of the road and you're riding in that section, and then there's a really, really sharp left-hand turn and you come completely across the cobbles and then back over onto that. I mean, it's some tricky riding. It's some real tricky riding. I'm sure that if you're not used to riding on bumpy and slippery stuff like that, and just because it's dry does not mean it's not slippery, you're going to get a little spooked by the fact that your bike is like kind of moving to the sides without your control. And that's what these guys do. It's really pretty cool. So anyway, 15K to go. Van Aert flats his rear wheel. And just before the road turns back to a smooth road, he's on the cobbles, he gets a flat, comes out onto the smooth road. Matthew Vanderpoel attacks hard, And of course, Van Aert can't even go through that corner fast because he's got a rear flat. If he did, he would have just kicked the back end of the bike out and he would have been on the ground. So he's waiting for a wheel at this point, riding on a flat tire. And Vanderpool goes away solo. Van Aert attacks at 7K, and he also is joined with Philipsen, who goes with him. And Philipsen, of course, is offering absolutely no help. Why? Because Matthew Vanderpool and Philipsen are both on the same team, the Albasen Denisink team. So that was that. So anyway, Van Aert just he time trials it in, gets into the stadium, you know, the velodrome. You have to do two laps around the velodrome. On his second lap around the velodrome and crossing the finish line and putting his hands up in the air, in come at the same time Van Aert and Philipsen. So they were a lap behind him, 30 seconds behind, basically, is what it turned into. So it was a big day for Van Aert and Philipsen's, for Vanderpool and Philipsen's team. Pretty cool stuff. And it gives Matthew another classic under his belt, which is pretty cool. It's just what would have happened if it had come down to a sprint to the finish? Good question. Your guess is as good as mine. But I think that Matthew Vanderpool is pretty motivated these days. He seems to be riding well. He's very emotional when he finishes. It was a very emotional finish for him. He's just kind of a fun guy to watch. Fun guy to watch race bikes. I like him. I like him a lot. So that was the Paris-Roubaix. That was it. It's over. Now we have to wait a year. What's with that? You have to wait a year. Anyway, great race. Always is. The cobbles are nasty. The fans are unbelievable, lining along the cobbles because that's where the action is. And why the fans don't get hit, I don't know. I think maybe they're learning their lesson and not stepping out in any way. But it's remarkable. And they're super, super fast. They broke a record again this year for speed. They keep doing this in all the races. I have a theory about it in the mountains, and the theory being the gearing is definitely improved dramatically. But it also goes along with, if you take a look at the stats on these guys and girls and what they're doing on their bikes, and they're like, you know, they've got the nutritional team behind them. They've got the science behind them. They've got the massage therapist. They've got the recoveries. They've got everything going in a much more productive direction for getting them ready to go again the next day. And it's showing. It's definitely showing that. So interesting. And I don't think it's anything more in the technology of the bike than the fact that the gearing has been been more conducive to getting over climbs and still being able to turn your legs around at a high RPM. And if you're a well-trained cardiovascular machine, that helps a lot. I know I'm enjoying my gearing. I just ordered more gearing for my carbon road bike, and that should be in this week. So I'm really excited by that, and I'm going to be able to gear that one down too, because I'm starting to enjoy this lower gearing on the bikes. I've got it both on my cross bike and also on my steel bike, and it's really it's a remarkable difference when you get to the hills, when you can keep your legs turning around that fast. And my old legs don't turn around as fast as they used to, so I need a little help. So it works out pretty good. I certainly have enjoyed that change, and I've enjoyed watching the races too. You know what Matthew got, Fran, when he won the race, right? You know what Matthew Vanderpool was handed at the end of the race?
Milk?
No.
Chocolate?
No, a cobblestone.
Oh.
The prize is a cobblestone.
Oh.
You get this big chunk of rock, and that's what it looks like. The trophy I look it up and you'll find it. No, he gets a cobblestone, and it's, you know, very few people get to take home the cobblestone. That's kind of a cool thing. So pretty neat stuff. It's all part of the queen of the classics.
There it is.
Yeah. So anyway, you get a cobblestone, and that's kind of a cool thing. And that's the prize. I'm sure there is a financial reward there too.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is kind of funny. I always thought that was a goofy thing.
Who won it? It was Matthew Vanderpool.
And then it was Matthew Vanderpool.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is. There's somebody in 2017 kissing a cobblestone. So that's it. You get a cobblestone. Yay! And of course, you know, the cobblestones are a big deal over there. There's actually Friends of the Cobblestone Roads groups that take care of the cobblestones and maintain the roads. These roads they go back to what, the 1100s, something like that? They're old roads.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've kept them. They've kept them there. So it's really, really cool. Really,
really cool. Because Wout Van Aert had a puncture.
Yeah, he did. You weren't listening to me, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. You're right here. Anyway, yes,
Wout
had it. And of course, Jasper Philipsen is a great sprinter. So unfortunately, Wout Van Aert did not stand a chance against him. So that team took first and second. Pretty cool stuff, and here they are, and there's a nice picture of them here. So what's it say here? It was clear, this is from Jasper Philipsen, we can feel proud of this. It was clear that Wout Van Aert and Matthew Vanderpool were the strongest today. They had the best legs on the crucial parts of the race, and it was impossible for me indeed to follow them. But I also had good legs. To be second while Matthew won was a dream come true. Of course, I would like to come back and win myself, but as for today, I'm going to enjoy the day. Now, the thing is, you know, he would not have been in that position if it hadn't been for the crash of Van Aert, because Van Aert was with Matthew Vanderpool. So they were 30 seconds up the road. But anyway, these things happen. It's bike racing. This is what happens. Vanderpool is human and a super strong bike rider. Together with Van Aert and Pogacar, they are the best riders in the world. Whenever they go, you know they're going to have something extra. So, yeah, it's we've got a new breed of riders that are in the pro pelotons right now. And Matthew Vanderpool had said, his comment was, it was one of his best days ever. It's incredible how we rode as a team today with Jasper finishing second. It's impossible to do better than this. I'm sure his grandfather is very proud of him right now, looking down from the heavens, if there are heavens. So anyway, that's it. That's the Paris-Roubaix. It's over. I can't talk about it anymore because...
So is it okay that Vanderpool passed him even though he was having a mechanical? He didn't, like, neutralize himself to wait for him? Is that okay?
Well, you know, it's 15K to go. I mean, what do you do? It's not like it's a alpine climb somewhere where, you know, if you take a look at the Tour de France, then, you know... It's the Tour de France is 22 days or 21 days.
Yeah.
The Paris-Roubaix is one day.
That's right.
It. One day. Yeah. It's a classic. So it's one of the one-day races. So, yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
But Vanderpool knew something was wrong, but he didn't realize he had a flat.
Oh, he knew.
Never mind.
He definitely knew. The way he put the hammer down as soon as Van Aert started backing down real quick, he knew. He knew he had something special going on. So... and the question is, and you know, if you're listening to the show and you want to make a comment, who would have won that sprint? If it had come down to Matthew Vanderpool and Wout Van Aert, who would have won the sprint? That's a good question for you. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, please send your comments over because I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. So good stuff. Anyway, what else have we got here on Bicycle Talk today? We got some more things in here that we want to talk about. So that's Paris-Roubaix. This I thought was kind of interesting. Let's see if I can find this. this was an article that I found in Cycling News, and it talked about how cycling can benefit the physical and mental health for women. From commuting to indoor cycling, getting time on the bike has unique benefits for women. So there's particular joy that accompanies riding with a bike, even as if every worry in the world has just slipped from the handlebars and ejected into the slipstream, lies a heap on the verge of beside the road. Okay, that's just a bunch of gunk. It has long been known that exercise can help improve mental health, and cycling is no different, reducing a person's risk of dementia, improving their sleep quality, promoting a great sense of well-being. Cycling out in nature and in green spaces can provide added benefits. And a 2011 study found that exercising in natural environments was associated with greater feelings of revitalization, increased energy, and positive engagement alongside decreased tension, confusion, anger, and depression. Though it acknowledged that further research was needed to better understand this link. This goes all back to Ron's theory of getting every young man with undeveloped brain cells and lots of testosterone on a bike is a much better direction to go than handing them something lethal. That could be a car, by the way. Just not to cause any political issues here, but you know where I'm going. Whenever I have a bad day or a bad period, I go for a bike ride, and suddenly everything is great, says Aidna Dumitsky, co-founder of Edinburgh-based cycling club Queens of Pain. The club is called the Queens of Pain. I use it as a quiet meditative aspect because when I ride, I really clear my head, and I'm lucky to live in Scotland, is where this person is from, where the scenery is so beautiful, and I just look outside and feel like I'm part of it, and I don't have to think about whatever dumb stuff is happening in my life. So, you know, I made a comment on our ride on Saturday, and we went on this road called Murphy Hill Road. And when you go up Murphy Hill Road, and you do go up it, by the way, it's got 12 or 13% on it. It's kind of steep in a couple of spots. Not much. Yeah. It's very short, but it's there. Yeah. So as we're going around, I'll give you a visual description here of this, or an audio description of this. You approach this farm, which has obviously been there for a very, very long time. Probably 1700s, I would guess, somewhere around there. And it is constructed out of fieldstone. Some of the buildings are, one side of the house is all fieldstone. The barns and the milk room are fieldstone. And it's got these gorgeous fields in the background. It sits way down into a valley, really down low in a valley. And beautiful stone walls that are wrapping around this. Across the street from it, and this is still part of the property, is a vineyard, which they have been developing for a number of years now. I would say that's been there for probably 20 years by now. Mm-hmm. It's been there for a long time. And I've often said this to people when I go through there. I feel almost criminal when I'm riding my bike through there, because I feel like I'm stealing their beautiful view. Because it's just so gorgeous. It's just like, it's just one of those places that you go on your bicycle, and you just, you know, you're there. You're doing it. You're happy. It's a beautiful thing. That going back to this whole mental health thing that is being talked about here in this article that I'm reading. So it's just such a joy to do that, to ride down that road. And I've taken a lot of people on that road. There's another way out of that valley that may or may not be easier, hard to say. There are two other ways out of that valley, but this one I always choose over all the others just because it's beautiful. And yeah, okay, I got to climb a nasty hill to get out of this thing, but what did I get to see? What did I get to experience before I hit the hill? This is cycling as I know it. This is how I feel about cycling. When my hands are on the handlebars and the road is moving underneath me, the world is right. I say it often. A lot of people have heard this from me. But anyway, Cycling is also, it can be a social activity, creates meaningful personal connections through its community clubs, and also it further boosts mental health by doing that. While mental health concerns affect everyone, women are generally at greater risk, says the Mental Health Foundation, partly due to social and economic factors, such as being more likely to live in poverty and experience abuse. How about that? So, yeah, cycling can be good for women. What do you think about that, Fran? Cycling good for women? Nah, she's not hooked at all, I can tell. She's not sold on this whole thing. She's
going
just
out later.
She's just you know, along for the ride because Ron likes to ride his bike.
No. Before I knew there was a Ron.
Yeah, you were riding before you knew there was a Ron. It's all true. And then you met me, and then you rode more. And it's beautiful. Because I used to make special little routes for Fran.
On paper.
On paper before there was GPS. Remember paper before GPS? Remember cue sheets? Well, I had a way of putting together cue sheets on a spreadsheet, and then I would laminate them, and then I would, you know, roll them around the handlebar and then tape them together, and then Fran could spin them around as she was going along so she could see where she was and where she had to turn next. Ah, the old days. Speaking of technology that has changed the world as far as bikes go, yeah, GPS is pretty strong. I think it's way up there. Oh, there's a Franny right there. I called them Frannies. That's what I called them. They were these cue sheets. Fran just held one of these things that I just described to you up to the screen. So they're kind of cool. It's a really simple and super easy thing to do. You just use a spreadsheet and you can do it from there. There you go.
This is one of the years of the what you call it? The Tour de Mansfield. That's what this is.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Which is coming up, and I don't think I put that on my calendar yet. So
and
I got to put it.
And it's the same day
as
the East Coast thingy.
Oh my God! There's so many things going on. They did.
They're not going to get
the Bike Mansfield folks. Unfortunately, were not, and it wasn't Bike Mansfield. I think it's the Downtown Stewards Partnership that puts that ride on. I have to double check, as well as the community center. They should have. It's Trails Weekend. It's like one of the biggest hiking weekends in the state of Connecticut. And that's going to conflict with a lot of things, drawing people into that weekend. They shouldn't have picked that weekend. But it's not me. I'm not doing that. They could have asked. But anyway, so cycling can connect a person to the community around them. It can also ground them in themselves, forging a stronger sense of identity. And people have definitely reported back positive outlook on how they see themselves and how they become to their own family, not just a mother or a sister or a wife, but they're able to add value and how they're building an outdoor life and outdoor experience for their family. So these are the ways that this is really good for women. Women are greatly affected by cycling. And, you know, some organizations, like one of them that I work for, the Farm to Fork Fondo, they have figured out a way to attract a lot of women to their events. Typically, in the past, I would say that most cycling events, I can say it now, even, but if I take a look at the stats on my race, it's much more men than it is women. And but Tyler Wren and Renegade Sports has done a really, really great job of marketing to women and really draws a lot more women into his events, which is kind of cool. It's kind of nice to see groups like my favorites, the Biker Chicks. They have little chickens on their jerseys. Very cute. So anyway, yeah, this is a benefit that women are getting from cycling. So that's a good thing. And let's see what else I got hiding in here that is kind of cool. Oh, let's talk about Amtrak. Amtrak. You know who they are. That's that train that, you know, goes across the country, goes up and down the East Coast, goes up and down the West Coast. They're there's a section here on Streets Blog that says Amtrak's patchwork policy could be deterring the most obvious riders. Cyclists. Yeah, cyclists on a train. What do you think? Question whether you can bring your bicycle on the next Amtrak trip should be a simple one, but it's because Amtrak doesn't give straightforward answer. Its rules vary widely from line to line, with some corridors taking a hard no policy to a near limitless bounty of bike storage without fees or reservations required for others, to a strict disassembling storage in a checkered box only for bikes per train, only four bikes per train, and for large swaths of the country, that's four bikes for the entire train, not per car. Many cyclists and advocates find differing policies frustrating. The four bike maximum policy is the norm for many lines, even those that run parallel to some of the country's best-selling rail-to-trail infrastructure. The 150-mile Great Allegheny Passageway from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C., and the 240-mile Katy Trail State Park across Missouri, and the 24-mile Eastern Trail in Maine are all serviceable by train at either end if you're lucky enough to secure a bike spot. Trains also could be used to access expansive long-haul trail networks like the Cross Washington Mountain Bike Route, Oregon Outback, and Eastern Divide Trail. So what's going on with Amtrak? Why can't they come up with some sort of consistency? Hey, is that connected in any way to Mr. Buttigieg? Is that a transportation secretary issue that needs to be addressed here? If somebody could reach out, that would be a really good thing. There's, you know, this is kind of a no-brainer. I mean, what does it take for a train to pull one more car that can house bicycles and or, you know, mail or whatever else that you're going to put in it that will make the train trip, you know, productive for someone? Obviously, they want to make money when they're operating these trains, but one more car does not really change the amount of cost involved to driving the train. So that's a thing that we really need to, like, take a good look at. So remedying exclusion. As companies like Patagonia, REI, North Face doubled down on their commitments to promoting greater equity and inclusion in the historically white sports, many recreational states remain exclusively accessible by a car. It's an unfortunate irony that many of the sports beloved by outdoor enthusiasts and conservationists alike, including hiking and mountain biking, are overly dependent on car culture. We know bikes are an important tool for mobility. Combining that access with the rail-to-trail, rail-to-recreation destinations could be a way to help remedy outdoor exclusion. Yeah. So anyway, hey Amtrak, you listening? The people at Streets Blog they're calling you out on this. So you might want to take a really, really good look at your policies and see what you think. I'm going to go right into our calendar section here because it's fairly long today. I've got a bunch of stuff coming up, and I just, some of which will have some detail here. And of course, reminding everyone that Saturday, April 22nd is Earth Day. Yeah, Earth Day. We talked about that a little bit last week. Earth Day is important because we are of the Earth and we are trying to help the Earth by riding our bicycles. So therefore, it has a direct connection. The Sea Otter Classic is April 19th through April 22nd. And that is coming up very soon. And Sea Otter Classic, if you're not familiar with it, is the largest, I think, one of the largest consumer shows in the United States. So if you're a bike geek and you really like to hang out with bike people doing bike things and checking out bike stuff, the Sea Otter Classic is definitely a big deal. It is in California. Also coming up, very important, May is Bike Month. And I will get into this a little bit more in future episodes of Bicycle Talk as we get closer to the month of May, maybe towards the very end of April, maybe the very first of May. But there's a lot of things going on, and a lot of this is promoted through the League of American Bikes, and there's a whole calendar of things that are going on, including our Ride of Silence, which is coming up, and we'll talk more about that as we get closer to it also. And there's even a piece that I found about Bike Month from the Census Bureau, believe it or not. Kind of cool. I'll cover that in a future episode, so you'll know. The 106th edition of the 2023 Giro d'Italia starts May 6th in Abruzzo, and the race begins with an individual time trial of 18.4 kilometers. The 110th edition of the Tour de France begins on July 1st, 2023, and it's starting in Basque Country this year. And the 78th edition of the Vuelta a España takes place in Barcelona on August 26th, 2023. And that also starts with a 14-kilometer team time trial. Team time trial on that one. Interesting. The Hop River mountain bike race is coming up April 15th. Very close this weekend. And it is the first of the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program Mountain Bike Series races for the kids. Kevin Mahan and I are involved with the Ride of Silence, which will be on May 17th, 2023. And we would love to have all of you come if you're in reachable distance. Maybe make your bike ride, show up at the Ride of Silence, then do the Ride of Silence with us. And if you need more information on that, certainly check out the Facebook page because there's links there. Or you can go directly to the Ride of Silence international website and check that out. Let's see here. Let's see. What else do I have here? The Quiet Corner Bike Tour presented by the Thread City Cyclers. This is Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. I'll have more information on that in the future. August 19th. Is the Steeplechase Bike Tour. So there's just tons of great stuff going on right here in Eastern Connecticut. And as I have said in the past, we have some just unbelievably beautiful roads to ride on. We call it the Quiet Corner for one really good reason. It's quiet out here. There aren't a lot of cars and trucks. And we have a lot of beautiful back roads that you can kind of get lost on and meander about. So it's really a great place to ride a bike. It's really, really beautiful here. So let's not also forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. And that is an event that that'll be going on for a while, all through the summer, maybe into the fall. Can't remember when the end date is on that. If you haven't seen it yet, you need to check it out. Connecticut is a very historic state for cycling and bicycle manufacturing here in the United States. Kind of a cool thing. And certainly you will learn something from it. I'm going to say it loud. I'm going to say it again, and it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution to change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, bring solutions, not problems. Okay. Positive beats negative every single time. Support your local bike shop. Please respect one another. It's 2023. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, tell everyone you know. And finally, take on the Pedal and Run Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it and use your bike just one day a week. You might surprise yourself. It's kind of a cool thing. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk, there's Franny, with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can leave comments below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet if they offer it. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.